T-Mobile has home internet on America's largest 5G network.
It's how I stream the game.
It's how I knock out the shopping list.
It's how I level up.
Get T-Mobile 5G home internet for only $50 per month with autopay and any voice line. Plus, there are no exploding bills or annual contracts. T-Mobile, it's how you internet. Check availability today.
Price after $10 monthly bill credit while you maintain a nationally available postpaid voice line. Qualifying credit required. Regulatory fees included for qualified accounts. Plus $5 per month without autopay. Debit or bank account required.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
HD Smartcast.
You are listening to an HD Smartcast original.
Don't you always want to hear it right from the horse's mouth? I certainly do. I want the best and the brightest minds in the industry to tell me about it. Yeah, Tell Me About It is my latest podcast. Since I come across so many interesting people in the industry, some of my favorite students, they ask me if I can speak to some really intelligent and well-known people on hot and trending topics, you know, like content, influencers, health, branding, entrepreneurship, and more. Who am I to quiz the best and brightest, you ask? Well, I am Siddharth Deshmukh, also known as the Traveling Professor. Maybe you've heard me before somewhere. Yeah, I teach across various institutes. Join me and new experts every week over two parts where we dissect these topics and try to make sense of them. Hopefully, learn something about it when they tell me about it. This podcast is an HT Smartcast original and is available on htsmartcast.com, India's fastest growing podcast producing platform. Got two unbelieving professionals over here. They don't think that anybody's listening to you guys, but actually I've got Kavita and Gunjan, Kavita Rajwade and Gunjan Arya. Welcome to this particular show of Tell Me About It. We are trying to do this for the past few weeks now, and this is the first time we've been blessed with two lovely ladies, and I'm feeling extremely, extremely conscious of the fact that I've been wearing a particularly hole-driven t-shirt. But welcome. What I wanted to do was maybe just give a little bit of context for today's webinar, and then maybe talk about you guys a little, and then just throw open the questions right from my side as well as the audience's side. We'll also be getting a lot of live questions. So here we go. Let's start with Kavita. Kavita and I have been associated with her cracking the whip and making me do her podcast one show at a time. And I just go yes, ma'am, to her almost every single day. I'm missing a deadline. So I know her really well from that side. I also know that she's an extremely energetic producer of IVM podcast shows. And trust me, Kavita, the amount of iconic, fervor that people have about IVM and obviously about OML as well, Gunjan, is just amazing. I mean, I've never seen such iconic brands being featured like this with so many young people. In fact, what I wanted to say was, here we are doing a webinar, right? And we are creating a new kind of content about new kinds of content. And we are talking about discontent with content. So it's a crazy little world. But Kavita has always been associated with new businesses. And I think that she went from new business to new business. And I think she's found her calling, her latest calling in the podcast industry. So welcome. I've got Gunjan as well. And she's she realized that advertising was not her cup of tea, or at least advertising is not the way to build anything in society or maybe brands in general. And so therefore she looked at brand consulting. And so that's where she cut her teeth. And from what I understand, you moved from brand consulting and started really developing this unique kind of company. You know, we all know of it as OML. So when I was heading placements at Mica, right? And when we were looking at So we used to call it OML. So I was like, what is OML? Because I just shifted from London to Pune. And I was like, only much louder. I'm like, damn, a company is called only much louder. Wonderful. Yeah. So India is really progressing. So welcome, Gunjan. And we are very, very pleased to have you, the CEO of OML and the co-founder of IBM Podcast. So here, this is a wonderful occasion for me to kind of set the tone. What we are trying to figure out is, see, we've always talked about content, right? And the content, changing content, this, that, and the other, we keep talking about it. But what we really don't know is how content is going to get shaped for the future. And especially with this COVID-19 thing, which must have come across as an opportunity and as a threat, right? And we'll be getting into a little bit of that for both of your businesses, right? And we're going to figure out, you know, what the path ahead is and what your observations are, and learn something from you, which doesn't really, that information doesn't exist in the world, is the way in which I look at it. Because there's so much of information nowadays that, you can move from one place to the other and kind of form a view. But I wanted to reach out to the experts and figure out how you guys are really thinking about this particular subject. So having said that, having dispensed with the formalities and having introduced the subject to the audience, here is what my first question is. And I'd like, let me ask the question first. And that is about, what do you see for yourself in the near future? Like when I say near future, it means 3 months, 6 months, 12 months, right? For your business and for yourselves, right? How has business changed? So maybe you can give us a little bit of a backdrop to what your answer is, and then answer it from that perspective. So I don't know, whoever wants to go first can go with it.
Oh, Gunjan.
Stop talking.
So just a quick intro to what OML does, and then I can sort of talk about how each one of those lines of businesses are looking at the immediate and near future. We started out as artist management, and that continues to be the DNA. We used to manage independent musicians earlier. Now, of course, the roster has expanded to include comedians and writers and directors, and they're all very busy producing more content. They're all at home. They're obviously figuring out how to make sure that we use this time well in the immediate scenario, as well as work on development of shows going forward. So that's one. The other one is the content business, where obviously there isn't much live shoots going on, but we are trying to figure out what it means to come back. And we're actually developing an SOP for, once shoots resume, what does it mean? How do you sanitize them? How do you make sure that they happen under hygienic conditions? And Sorry, I didn't catch that.
That's a really funny word to use, sanitizing them.
Okay. Absolutely, but unfortunately, the need of the hour, right?
Yeah.
So that's happening on the content side. There is the live events team, obviously is the hardest hit, given that I don't see massive festivals like the Bacardi N87 Weekender happening anytime soon, because it's not just about us being comfortable putting it together, but also expecting folks to feel comfortable to come out, where people up to groups of like 20,000 come out together. So Voto obviously will take a long, long time.
Gunjan, I think that Symbiosis and Slim, you're making a lot of heartbreak right now.
I was just going to say that we managed to pivot very quickly to digital events, and we actually did two editions of Weekender online. Kavita and I were chatting about it. Outside of that, we've done the Circuit Comedy Festival online as well. We've done a bunch of other shows. So that team's currently working on digital events as opposed to live events.
Yeah.
And then there is a global brand solutions business, which is currently focusing on creator-led content, which is easy to produce during the lockdown. And we're working with brands across 20 plus countries, making sure that we have on point, extremely relatable, authentic content going out from creator feeds globally for all languages in those markets. So that's really what the business looks like right now. Of course, time will only tell. The governments have far more urgent and pressing matters to attend to instead of looking at, you know, the entertainment industry and seeing how that revives. But we're guessing that films will have to come back sooner or later, because that's obviously more mass entertainment. Yeah, and yeah. Once things like that start, for us, it'll be really easy to get started again.
Okay. And so, in a nutshell, background that you've given us, how do you see formal language for the next month? Are you moving to digital events, or are you going to stay and wait for and then go back when business becomes normal again? Is that, what's the plan?
So, honestly, there's no way to sugarcoat it.
Yeah.
But more than opportunism in crisis, I feel like this is an opportunity for us to really try new things. A lot of things that were on the back burner and never really got experimented with are happening now. So, in fact, there's a network TV show, I think CBS did a courtroom drama where they actually shot an entire season finale using Zoom calls.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And they actually put the episode out. So I'm sure more and more of these things will happen. A lot of us are going to be trying these. In fact, we're shooting a bunch of content pieces that are shot in lockdown at home. We just put out a music video with Ritviz, which is completely user-generated. So we got everybody, all his fans, to send in music videos, and we edited and put it out together. So a lot of that will happen, which is more immediate short-term solves. Also, with digital events, we know that it doesn't necessarily replace the intimacy of attending. We'll have to keep bettering that. And then, of course, as and when things open up, I believe we'll see a combination of both digital and physical events. Even physical events will have to get a lot smarter. Honestly, we are the ones to blame. We haven't really modernized with time, because a lot of things were sort of going on as they were. And the philosophy was always, hey, if it's not broken, let's not fix it. But yeah. It's nothing. This necessary pause which will almost force us to figure out, hey, what are the things we need to do?
Right. Okay. Well, on to Kavita then. What do you think, Kavita?
So, the good thing, unlike, Gunjan or maybe OML, you know, where the business relies on being outdoors or, you know, requires you to podcasting that way. And one thing that I've always, like, enjoyed about audio, right, that it's a very simple, frill-free, dynamic medium. You know, one thing that at IBM, and just to give everybody here who's listening to us an idea, we're currently, like, India's, like, 10 most, you know, probably varied genre content platform. You know, we've been around 5 years now. We've been pretty much, you know, trying to write the rule book as we go along, because one very interesting stat, in 2016, 82% of India heard their first podcast, an Indian podcast. And way back in 2016, it was us. And so, you know, I think IBM could take a lot of credit for introducing pretty much what an OML probably would have done way back in 2010 when they first put out their edition Weekender. So these are subculture businesses, right? And you are going to go from a very minority audience to kind of build it into, you know, someone's habits. So, I mean, to just, you know, like, to compliment Gunjan on everything that they do at OML, I haven't missed a single edition of Weekender. You know, it's something that is really close to my heart, and I'm really worried that this year I will not be able to go to this festival. But at the same time,
we don't know that yet. Let's not.
I will wait for, like, some great news to come to me from that perspective. But I think what at IBM, the fact that, you know, we're an audio network, the fact that, you know, we've always thought that, you know, since it's a single sense immersive experience, we must ensure that we deliver great quality, you know, not via content perspective, but just generally what the experience is, right? Internationally, fiction is really, really huge. But at the same time, fiction needs a lot of money to be made and created, because it's got voice actors, it's got production, it's got a lot of that kind of stuff, right? We first started putting out conversational shows because way back in 2015, 2016, India doesn't have a talk radio culture. You know, our radio stations, you know, TRAI regulations don't allow you to do news, current affairs, you know, politics, any of that, right? And that's where we saw this huge content gap and thought we should be there. One very quick thing that has happened for us, you know, post-corona, at the same time, you know, at the end of it all, I don't think we really figured that, you know, it was going to take us this long to kind of get out of lockdown. So initially, you know, it was a very... like, okay, this seems like we need to kind of pretty much work from home. Okay, how quickly do you need to pivot? Do you need to kind of just modify some ways of working? And, you know, and we needed to prioritize. And, you know, you go back to the drawing board and you think, okay, why did you start doing this in the first place? And we very quickly kind of, you know, found that, you know, almost all our hosts were willing to kind of, you know, host their shows from their homes. You know, the good thing, like I said, with audio, you know, frill-free, right? Like, you know, you really actually need a great quality mic, you know, a quality conversation, because that's, you know, where it's at the center. So I think in the last 7 weeks of lockdown, I mean, I think the bestest pats that we've got on our backs is that, you know, thank you for continuing to put your shows out. Because if there's any normalcy in our lives right now, is to at least like listen to our favorite hosts, you know. And really, actually, we thought that, you know, I think one day before actually working from home, I really thought that, you know, we could probably hit maybe 50-60% what our content cycle was. But it was amazing to kind of see that we kind of hit that 90-93%, like, you know, very, very, very quickly. So, I mean, that's something that, you know, I'm happy about, because, like I said, that, you know, it kind of gave us an idea of how, you know, you could use technology. You know, like Gunjan said, that, you know, there were some things that were just on the back burner. You know, we didn't experiment. We didn't, you know, figure how we should kind of work some ways. But I think I'm really glad that, you know, we've managed to hit a certain kind of cycle. And, you know, and now, like I said, the bigger challenge is to kind of produce shows remotely. You know, earlier I have, like, you know this, Sid, like, I have, you know, had enough and more playtime in the studio where I would put you in the studio and get you to speak. And, you know, I don't have that opportunity anymore. And so now I'm pretty much guiding people on Zoom calls. But I'm happy about, like, where we are.
Okay. Well, it's a wonderful thing to be happy from a production perspective. But right. From a market perspective, Kavita, where do you see podcasts going? Is it like a pivotal point from a market perspective? Are the early adopters and innovators going towards early majority, or is it still early days? How are people perceiving podcasts? Is there any change that you've seen?
So I think podcasts and radio, I think, are having their little moment in the sun. You know, I think audio, just like I said, the ease of, like, you know, being able to communicate is easier. Video maybe, but I personally feel that this is a magic moment for behavior change. Yeah. I think, you know, just like I said earlier about the fact that, you know, people were not really prepared for, you know, a long lockdown.
Yeah.
What is the lockdown? How are we? What is this? What does this mean? You know, how much of this time are we really going to spend at home working? So at the same time, I feel like, you know, we've seen a huge surge in listens. We've had some changes in how those listens are happening. You know, we would normally see a very organic 10% month-on-month growth on listeners. And that could, and you know, when people ask me, you know, when you're a cash-strapped startup, like, Kavita, how do you market? And I'm like, my content strategy is my marketing strategy. You know, how the kind of shows that you put out kind of always pull in a new pocket of listeners. And, you know, what that can do for you is that it can help you figure how you want to progress in what kind of shows you want to put out right now at this time. So what we're seeing right now is that we're seeing a huge, huge jump in desktop listens, you know, because a really huge part of podcast listening happens on your commute. And since commutes don't exist anymore, and maybe your outdoor time doesn't exist anymore, then what is it that is, you know, replacing this consumption time? And I think now you spend maybe 3 hours cleaning your home and cooking, right? And so you still have a large chunk to kind of podcast listening. So yeah, I think it's interesting, because I think in the first 3 or 4 weeks, I think there was a little bit of a, I'm going to sit at home and watch every single show I have missed on an OTT platform. And then suddenly you realize that, oh my God, there's a single television and I need to share this with my sibling. And so podcasts, you know, offer you that little like bubble of privacy, you know. So what that does is that you've got your headphones on and you're pretty much transported to like some other place. So I guess that's what is kind of happening. But hopefully this trend continues.
Okay.
And we'll see where we get at.
All right. Thanks a lot. Well, that's a great segue for me to ask my second question. And my second question is about, you know, actually it's a question from somebody who's sent this to us. It says, what is brilliant content? We keep talking about, you know, that's brilliant content. Yeah, that's brilliant content. You know, so what is brilliant content? And because, you know, OML has done so many crazy things as far as content is concerned, I wanted to get your perspective, Gunjan, on what, according to you, is brilliant content. What makes it, you know, today we can say that even this Zoom call is brilliant content or somebody's Instagram stories are brilliant content. What is brilliant content according to you?
So honestly, brilliant content is what works for you. And I think Kavita touched upon that earlier as well.
Yeah.
Essentially, we're catering to audiences of one now. Given how fragmented the digital media landscape is, there are subcultures and smaller pockets. Everyone's newsfeeds and timelines are individualistic to them. They are constructed by personal preferences and personal behavior patterns. Yeah. So if you chance upon something and you watch it and you like it, it is brilliant content. Uh-huh. And while we have a whole team that looks at data and analytics and all of that, right? All of those things only help in terms of creating the guardrails.
Mm-hmm.
In advertising parlance is probably the brief.
Are you driven by data first, or are you driven by your intuition first and then you check it against data?
It has to be a combination of both, because creativity is essentially human effort.
Mm.
Yes, you can draw inspiration from the data and what it's telling you, but after that, what you do is entirely, which is why for us at OML, it's always about the creators we manage. It's about what ideas they have, because they probably know their audiences best. So it's for us, it's more about making those ideas come into fruition. And honestly, they're the most creative folk we know. So they're the guys that create the brilliant content.
Right. But I'm just trying. So what you're saying is brilliant content is decided by the market. And that's a pretty interesting way. But my question, I think you answered it partially. Do you start with data, or do you start with your gut and then you corroborate it with data? How does it work for you?
So like I said, there isn't necessarily a starting point. Of course, depending on what the necessary outcome is. So hey, if we're creating branded content, then yes, we will follow audience matching as, you know, a prereq. We will follow trends that a particular TG is, you know, sort of be displaying as behavior patterns. We will make sure that the content that we put out is rooted in those. So yes, data is very necessary there, because then, hey, it's not an art project. It's a marketing project. You're not funding a personal art project, right? I like this artist. I'm going to work with this artist. It's more about, hey, this is what I need as marketing reach, and therefore, this is what I'm going to work with. But of course, when we're working on shows, like I said, honestly, our starting point is the creators. They have ideas that haven't probably been done before, and those deserve to get made. So that's, I don't believe those are necessarily rooted in data, but I'm sure the platforms that are commissioning it, and I'm sure Kavita can talk a bit more about this, there is necessarily a content strategy that then says that, hey, if I work with this creator on this particular show, it gets me audiences that I didn't have before. So I'm sure there is some sort of sense of, hey, okay, this artist has this much audience inbuilt into their fan following, so this is what we bet on.
Okay. Well, thanks. In fact, that's a great segue for Kavita to come in and tell me what she thinks. What is brilliant content and how do you figure it? Because in your case, as well as, in Gunjan's case, you are creating not just content which is dissimilar from each other, but really dissimilar, right? So, you know, you have the traveling professor's diary, but then you have, you know, your so different from somebody, Agla Station, whatever. So it's so different, right? How the hell do you figure that out?
So I think unlike maybe the creator network that OML has, right? I mean, You know, these guys are really well known. They're funny, they're popular, they're very good at what they do, all kinds of things. I think we needed to kind of start from scratch. Yeah. I think if we have 100 shows, I think maybe only two of our hosts are like outside of Cyrus, somebody else who really came from any kind of hosting experience or, you know, and so we needed to kind of identify. So I think a lot of it, I think where IVM was concerned was gut. I'm a marketing person turned content person. So I pretty much look at things as like, okay, there are like, I see gaps, I see content and I see gaps within them. And so there is an opportunity there. And, you know, I think I can pretty much layer a certain idea and build it to suit a certain palette. I don't know what that palette is. I think someone out there, you know, has, an appetite for something like that. One great thing that we've managed to do is that we've really, really managed to experiment. I think we've, you know, had the opportunity to go out there and literally throw pebbles and see, you know, let's see what ripple effect this creates, right? Let's see what. Another thing is that, you know, I personally believe that every creative idea or every narrative, you know, has a primary audience. You know, you put it out a show, a storytelling show, you know that story, story listening fans are there to lap that stuff up. How are you now going to kind of find your secondary and tertiary audiences? So again, I guess that's my brand and advertising, experience or marketing experience, that I'm just like, you know, every single idea can't be this, let's hide behind an esoteric curtain towards, you know, because, hey, we are podcasts, we can be the niche within the niche. And no, I think every show should be marketable. I think every show should tell a certain relatable story. I think every host needs to be spectacularly good at like what subject matter expertise they bring to the table. Podcast hosts are not, interviewers or, you know, that's not what they do. I think podcasts are about great conversations, right? I think, your ability to have a good conversation will set you apart and build in certain amount of relatability where your fans or, you know, your supposed fans are, because we've had to kind of start from scratch. Like I know, Sid, you're really popular in MICA and most other colleges, but we needed to kind of build you up, you know, into a person that, you know, hey, so I know you could be a familiarity, but like how else is this narrative going to attract business? So that's why then, you know, if you see the kind of show you put out, I'm sure you know this because you record this on a weekly basis, but you know that every time you're telling a story, you know that anyone or everyone who's out there who picks what your point is the audience. You know, so now that could be a 15-year-old or that could be a 60-year-old who's like, oh man, this penny just dropped right now, which is fine, right? Which is great. But I guess that's how. So a lot of it is gut. Yes. You know, in our case, like I said, you know, we are experimenting with a lot of stuff. And then, like I said, there's some amount of strategy in, you know, how you bring out quality conversations.
Okay. Oh, very interesting. So now I've started getting a lot of, okay, I'm just going to show you this to scare the both of you. I've started getting questions like mad. So I'm now going to ask separate questions. Okay. So question for Gunjan. Okay. The question is, and I'm going to also add my two bits to it. According to me, I think that because we've gone lockdown, it's not just going to be digital. It's actually going to be physical because we are connected to each other as a tribe, right? And the fact is that we miss that. And I think that we don't really recognize that we miss that. But do you see actually people, you know, there was something called the Roaring Twenties, which happened immediately after, the swine flu and the depression, right? So do you see something like that happening? If yes, can you justify that? If no, can you tell me why not?
Sure. Honestly, if the Roaring Twenties is something that we should be expecting, we should also be expecting a lot of hideaway bars, which, by the way, did get found. So I won't be surprised. Honestly, it's a very human reaction to it. There are a lot of travel companies that have releases saying, hey, we're banking on millennials traveling to make up for the last few months in lockdown. Guys, please don't. If any of you are planning to, it's a really bad idea. Because we've studied what's happened in the past with, say, the Spanish flu or you know, the first wave of influenza, etc., there's always been a second and a third wave, and those have been far more deadlier. In terms of OML preparing for it, I think it will be a combination of physical and digital. In my mind, shoots will open before events do, because shoots are a lot more controllable. There's smaller groups of people. You can control who goes in, who goes out. You can keep a sense of medical history. You can track all of those things.
Yep.
So I believe shoots will start before events do. And even with events, I don't believe that we've done the best job of converting Weekender as a festival into an online experience just yet. We even did this.
It's not going to Calcutta, by the way. There's somebody who's asking that question. Why did NH7 stop coming to Kolkata after 2015?
I touched about that before, about it being a marketing exercise and not just an art project. But honestly, the numbers didn't justify it. We never seem to be able to pull the kind of audiences that maybe make sense in a Kolkata. And perhaps the lineup needed to be re-looked at. So we hope we can come back. And yes, we'll come back with a lineup that makes sense.
Both of you are from a marketing background, but now, you know, also looking at content or looking at content, you know, in a much deeper way. And so therefore, it's strange, but because your background is like that, it's coming through in the kind of decision making. Because Kavita was talking of need gap and all of that, and you're talking of, okay, this market's not working for us and stuff like that. This is quite refreshing, because, you know, I've had enough of creators who go off on their own limb without really figuring out, you know, how it's going to work. I have a question for Kavita. Now, we've talked of changing content consumption behavior. Right? You've said that how content changes and stuff like that. Now, do you see any scope for, I'm just trying to figure out, you know, how podcasts can actually embrace, let's say, small businesses or medium to small businesses. Do you think that can they market themselves through podcasts in a different way? I know it's connected to monetization, but... No, go on. It's all right. This is a webinar where we can cut each other.
I think small businesses will need a new look at how they kind of do things. I don't know if they'll have the money to really experiment with like a new medium per se, you know, and how they could probably use a platform like this to kind of, you know, put forward like what their brand story is. Yeah. But so I don't know that, you know, whether they will benefit. Like the good thing about like podcasts or any kind of like online content is that it's there for perpetuity, right? Like you'll be able to like, you know, bank on the fact that, you know, you could make for yourself like a great 10-part series on what like the ethos or what like the product of your organization is. But at the end of it all, I guess small and medium enterprises will need far more, you know, like, you know, more impactful ideas for like, you know, with better reach. You know, if I may say so. So, you know, and for right now, like I said, like podcast is a subculture business. You know, we are not like a top priority, like where like first, I mean, we need to break so many of those mindsets. I mean, right now, like I said, I would describe the podcast audience as the tastemaker audience. These are people that, you know, these are listeners, of course, but even the people that, you know, are creating this kind of content, and for brands to be aware of this. So I think that will be a little while before they kind of use a medium like this, okay. Because it will be too much of an experiment, I think.
Okay. So you're literally saying no to them. Don't do it.
I'm happy to. No, not that. I'm just saying that, you know, I mean, you know, said we wait so 4 years to kind of to get like even like the hottest brands to look at us, right? Like, and I'm so from that perspective, I'm like, I know how tough that is.
Yeah.
To get, you know, someone who probably needs to use, you know, newspapers or radio or something like that to create far more impact. I think they'll probably go there. But if they're coming to me, I'll be happy.
Yeah, but here's a really interesting story, right? I have heard of some guy just shooting stray dogs, shooting stray dogs on his camera and saying, okay, this guy's here, this guy's here, this guy's here. And suddenly, a Gaichhap tobacco company started sponsoring his Instagram stories because it got really big. Okay, so this is like really crazy. And the reason why I'm using this crazy example is that perhaps maybe because, you know, all of us come from a background which is old media in that sense. We could be also relooking at things, you know, from, I don't know what you guys think.
Backtalk Media has a, or maybe the owner of this company has a really young son or daughter that is rethinking like a lot of content strategy for them. And, you know, they're obviously being able to see the joys of probably, you know, spending money on TikTok or on Instagram. But that'll be refreshing. I'll be happy to kind of troubleshoot, you know, that opportunity if that comes my way. But yeah, I mean, like I said, it's not that, you know, they can't. We've worked with some really interesting upcoming, you know, brands, you know, not established, because I also think that the synergy is in like just as much as we're like pretty much like flying out like into like, you know, the oblivion of like the kind of work we're doing right now. And I guess even brands need to kind of think that way, right? So I think before the Unilevers...
No, go on.
Sorry, I missed that.
No, I'm saying, how do you see the evolution of monetization in your respective industry? So it's a question for both of you. It's asked by Tushar. By the way, shout out to Pranjal and Vyom and all the rest of you who are asking questions. Right.
Okay. So I think we're already on the way to monetize. I think we needed to kind of hit like a critical, you know, like I said, you know, all of 2019, I went nuts, like, you know, producing shows. I was very keen on getting at least, if nothing, to be spoken about in the market as a 100 podcast network, and that we don't just mean, you know, that, you know, we've got like 5 items on the menu and I'm like comfortable with just that. It was important for us to kind of, you know, like you spend all this time cultivating, you know, interest from other people that with what you're doing, right? And so we needed to kind of have a very sizable you know, opportunity to kind of say, hey, come home. We've got like, you know, 100 like goodies for you to try from. And so we needed to kind of get there to at least even being spoken in like, you know, advertising circles, you know, in marketing circles, in to kind of, so I think, you know, we needed to focus. But now that we're there, and because these 100 odd shows get us, you know, the kind of listenership that we now have, I guess brands now are realizing that, you know, it's best also to be a part of a slightly clutter-free advertising environment, you know, because there is a certain amount of hygiene that podcast formats follow, maybe over radio, you know, that was, you know, something that people spoke about radio. So I guess the clutter-free environment will kind of lure people in. But I guess it will need, it needs a certain kind of a thinking optic to kind of understand that opportunity there. So, and it'll take some time maybe, but we're there actually. Like I said, we've already worked. I think banking and financial brands are really, you know, up to kind of experimenting. So we worked with a lot of that. And more marketing heads love us, you know, and they listen to a lot of our shows. We are now cleanly finding ourselves in like media plans, which I'm happy about.
I think, okay.
Yes.
Wow, that was a good one, right? More of where that came from soon. Want to reach out to me? I'm Siddharth Deshmukh and I'm the traveling professor on Instagram. You'll find the funny side of me there. And on LinkedIn, I'm a little bit more serious, but I'm still the traveling professor. To give us feedback, you can reach out to us on HT Smartcast. We are present on Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, Twitter, and YouTube, the usual suspects. To listen to more podcasts, log on to htsmartcast.com or suno naye nazariye se. And join me in the journey. Onward ho!
This was an HT Smartcast original.
HT Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
T-Mobile has home internet on America's largest 5G network.
It's how I stream the game.
It's how I knock out the shopping list.
It's how I level up.
Get T-Mobile 5G home internet for only $50 per month with autopay and any voice line. Plus, there are no exploding bills or annual contracts. T-Mobile, it's how you internet. Check availability today.
Price after $10 monthly bill credit while you maintain a nationally available postpaid voice line. Qualifying credit required. Regulatory fees included for qualified accounts. Plus $5 per month without autopay. Debit or bank account required.